This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat?
We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Imagine it's the weekend, it's cold outside. It's not hard to imagine. At the moment, you message your friend to cancel that social engagement is, to be honest, you just don't want to stay home, or you just want to stay home and you want to binge, watch your favourite TV series. You're in your pyjamas, fluffy slippers, I'm projecting here in case you haven't guessed it, and you start watching. You're already up to your fourth episode for the season and you start to feel guilty and think, oh my goodness, I should really get off my backside and go out for a walk, at least get some fresh air. Does that sound pretty familiar? Well, we've got some good news. We might think that binge watching is a rather new phenomenon, but not so. We've been doing it for thousands of years. Yes, thousands of years. How so? Darius von Goodner is an historian at the Australian Catholic University. Darius, welcome back to Drive.
Hello.
Are you a binger?
A bit, especially on historical period dramas, yes.
Ah, I can imagine. The last time we spoke to you, we spoke about Oppenheimer, which is quite a long movie. We could probably watch, I suppose, the equivalent of maybe 3, 4, 5 episodes of a series in the same time. Why is watching a movie, I suppose, acceptable, but binge watching can invoke these sort of negative thoughts?
I wonder whether this is the whole word, binge, that is related to kind of obsessive compulsive behavior that, you know, you just stick to it, you watch it, you want to have more and more, and you ignore everything else. Because you're absolutely right. We talked about Oppenheimer, which was a very long film. How is it different to watching Bridgerton or something that I watched quite recently, the thing about Benjamin Franklin and his visit to France to secure support for American War of Independence. I mean, how is it different?
Did you binge it?
No, actually, because I think it was released episode by episode, so there was no chance. But you get to the end of the episode, the producers put the hook in. You already enjoy it, so you would like to know more. How difficult is it to just wait the 5 seconds before it just flicks to the next?
I hate that. The next episode will start in 3 seconds. And you do. You think, well, I haven't even got time to make a cup of tea or anything. I might as well start watching it. It's like they're forcing us. Has there been any discussion around the health impacts of binge watching?
You're asking a little bit of the wrong person. I'm a historian rather than a health expert. But from what I glean, there is research that deals with various impacts on our daily life that some people seem to, or research is suggesting that some people use it as a convenient way of escaping reality, some others that essentially just dissolve into this unproductive state of just inhaling entertainment, because binge watching, that's what it is. It is entertainment. It is entertainment supplied almost in the continuous stream. So plug yourself into the matrix is another quote that I heard. So researchers are providing all sorts of kind of statistical data about various form of behavior and suggesting that perhaps because it is almost addictive, there's something wrong with us in that regard.
Darius, as an historian, is binging a new thing, or has it been around, like I said, for thousands of years?
When first time this question was kind of thrown at me, I said, well, it's nothing new. It's nothing new because we always liked, humans always liked storytelling. We always wanted to hear more, whether we were learning or entertaining. Storytelling was all with us. So there are examples of stories and oral history or traditions, especially so valid in this continent, in our country. For example, some of the Aboriginal stories were traced to some events that happened 12,000 years ago, which make us just think, wow, So binging is a new word, but in fact, we have been passing on knowledge, culture. We've been entertaining each other with stories for literally millennia.
When I imagine before, I mean, written text hasn't always been around. What impact did writing have on, I suppose, storytelling or binge storytelling?
It had enormous impact. Initially, those written manuscripts were very restrictive because it only very rich could enjoy them. But later on, with printing press, which started to democratize, I'm not saying it did, but it started to democratize knowledge and entertainment in print. So we had books printed in serials, we had books printed in volumes, we had the whole volumes collected. Then came libraries, and then at the end of it came public libraries, so which we still appreciate as the places of refuge from the noise of the world outside, not necessarily to read the physical book, but also to binge on something that we do with our headphones in.
We're chatting with Darius von Guttner, historian at ACU, about why we shouldn't feel bad binging our favourite TV series. Darius, tell us a little bit about the moral panic that I was reading in an article that you wrote in The Conversation that the printing press brought about in England.
This is one of these typical stories that when society is bound by certain expectation, by certain moral expectations of others. And this is a comment from a researcher who looked at the commentary observation or reactions to women reading by candlelight in bed. And the whole notion why should they read? You know, this is going to corrupt them in some specific way, and especially if it's Jane Austen. Interesting enough that created this kind of stereotype of a woman who is an avid novel reader, that apparently women don't read any kind of hardcore science, for example. I mean, look, Marie Curie was alive at the same time, so we know that that's not true. But it was an interesting piece of this research which brought together this image of how reading, and then reading in a specific way on a sofa or in bed by candlelight, how it was seen as being something negative.
Did they read in public?
They did. And we had, in different cultures across all continents, we had a different way of reading. Some of it was public reading by one singular reader, when others listened and enjoyed that. There were those which brought people, and number of people that read together to others. They were then some of those people that were listening actively to stories being read out, and they followed the story in print by holding their own copy. And then we had those situations where people read in turn. So you had so many different varieties. We simply adapted.
I wonder, when you think about this, and I love the term moral panic about reading in England at the time, and I wonder if it's just a sort of a natural reaction that we have when there is major change like that. You know, perhaps knowledge becomes available, and I wonder if that's what is one of the reasons why, you know, with the advent of streaming services as a new type of technology, we start to view it as, oh, it could be, you know, it's a change, it's something threatening. You know, it's like social media, even though there is some negativity around social media. I wonder if that's the case, and it was just back then it was the books being available to women by candlelight.
I mean, why not? This is one of the propositions we can put out there, because it is, we fear the unknown. We fear something that we have not yet comprehended, and then perhaps, you know, the stereotype of, rather than idly reading a novel, you could be doing something else, something that a person passing by or observing the situation thinks is far more productive. So many things we can read into it. But, you know, we face a change, quite a bit of change in terms of our attitude to that kind of behavior. But the negative vision of binging is part of it, I think. You called it moral panic in the 19th century. Now you can kind of relate to it by when people talk in negative way about binging.
Is it fair to say, I suppose, the you know, the busyness of our lives and that focus that we do have? I mean, we're always talking about the economy and production and cost of living and all of this sort of stuff. Everything's talked in numbers and dollars. Has that cast a negative shadow, I suppose, over binging, and that perhaps We need to look at, that rather than necessarily the binging itself, and then get back to binging, like you said, as just being a long form of storytelling.
It's almost like going back to the 8-hour movement, 8-hour work, 8-hour for other things, and 8 hours for entertainment or self-improvement. I mean, humans always needed entertainment. Clearly, some of us wanted more than others. Entertainment comes in different forms and shapes. But also there's another way of marketing it too. Now, the Netflix is saying the best, binge-worthy TV programs, and there is a whole channel called Binge. So the language also and the marketing is drawing us in. But I guess the warning here for all of us is everything in moderation, I guess.
Definitely. Darius, I find it fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us on Drive Again.
Thank you.
Darius von Guttner, who's an historian at the Australian Catholic University.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne. Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.